Yeah, this is the OG on the playlist right here. So I'm telling you.
But this is actually one of his later hits. Like, he was already... He already had a bunch of hits before this came out.
Wait, why does that matter?
Well, you called it the OG. Like,
for
it,
me! Like, okay, no, I was right. Speaking completely selfishly.
I thought you meant, like, this is what...
This is the...
The Eddie Money.
No.
This strapped the rocket on his back.
This is the one that brought one Justice to appreciate other Eddie Money. Love this. I love this song.
Gateway Money.
This is Gateway Eddie Money. Justice and Drew, Breanne filling in for Sam on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. No, I just mentioned this morning that I realized I was a bigger Eddie Money fan than I knew. There were other Eddie Money songs. There's a Christmas one I like a lot, too.
Everybody's got a Christmas song.
But the Eddie Money Christmas one is kind of a riff on, the end of it is like a riff on Take Me Home Tonight. Just like Ronnie says. But,
yeah, right.
Everybody loves Christmas.
Mm. Everybody loves Christmas. Yeah. No, my favorite one is I Saw Eddie Money Kissing Santa Claus.
Best lazy Christmas song, by the way, is September, and they just changed it to December.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Like that's really...
Earth, Wind, and Fire?
Yeah, Earth, Wind, and Fire, right? It's exactly
that's
the same
song.
It's just a great song. They just changed it to December.
That's lame.
And they're like, all right, hammer that check. Let's go get another plane.
I had the brilliant idea one year to write a Leap Day song.
Oh, yeah.
Because then I figured every 4 years, the royalty checks would just stream in.
That's literally the worst holiday you could pick revenue-wise.
Yeah.
But... Nobody's done it.
That's true.
Nobody's done it.
What was your theme?
That's where I hit the stumbling block. Was actually I can't write.
He's
songs.
Not a detail person.
Yeah.
After that, you can write a hot track about Halley's Comet.
Brian Miller, Brian McDaniel, join us in the studio for the roundtable. I remember
my next hit, Path of Totality.
Ooh, actually, that sounds pretty good. That sounds like a Metallica album from the 80s.
Drew played me his Leap Day, Leap Year. I actually remember how it went. Yeah. That's about all I remember. It was awful.
It was very catchy.
It was horrible.
No,
it's okay. We're good.
Do you have it?
We're really, really good.
I might be able to find it.
We're really good on that.
Do I dare play that on the air?
The logic. No. No, it's really bad. It is really, really bad. All right. For the past several months, cities across the country have been competing for the opportunity to host Amazon's second headquarters, which promises $5 billion in capital investment, 50,000 new jobs over a period of time. The bids are all in. I had the opportunity to, this comes out of dig.com, to review some of the staggering subsidies offered to one of Silicon Valley's biggest companies. Before we get to that, though, so our bid on this was meager, light. Like, we'd like to have you come. That was the extent of it, right?
It was, you know, tell us you're coming, and then we'll tell you what we'll give you.
Yeah.
Which isn't a good way to do it.
New Jersey proposed $7 billion in potential credits against state and city taxes if Amazon locates to Newark. New York made a proposal without incentive special for Amazon, though the state is expected to offer some, according to a spokesperson. California offered some $300 million in incentives over several years and other benefits. Moody's ranked Austin as the most likely to win based on its labor pool, cost of doing business, and quality of life.
And Austin's so cool.
Yeah, right.
They're so cool.
They'll be the first ones to tell you how cool they are, too.
Keep Amazon weird.
Yeah. They will go out of their way to tell you over and over how cool they are.
Eddie Money can't even play Austin.
You look through the list of nine other cities that Bloomberg says have a good shot. Atlanta's on here. Boston. Chicago. Denver. Detroit. Detroit offers low rent, potential for larger tax breaks. Plus, like, they got a lot of space.
Yeah, a lot of empty buildings there.
Yeah, they offered them miles 6 through 8.
You know who also offers low rent is everybody else who has no money. Every bad neighborhood offers low rent.
Yeah.
You're like, well, that's one thing you can say about this bombed out warehouse. Very low rent.
New York, Pittsburgh, and then Toronto's on the list.
That's
not America.
Yeah, right.
They just had to make Canada feel okay. You know, it's like, tell them we're thinking about Toronto.
Washington was also on there, too, and they touted the highly educated workforce, public transportation. The Amazon founder owns the Washington Post. I didn't know that. And last year purchased the largest home in the city.
The problem is there's no space there. I mean, there's no place to put anything around Washington.
D.C.?
No. It's so condensed. right? I mean, you've been there.
No, I've never been there.
You've never been there?
I've never been to Washington, D.C. Well, in a past life, I worked at the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, where we kind of did a lot of this, you know, luring of businesses. The incentives is something, yes, in a pure way, you know, we shouldn't have to do. Other places will do it, so unfortunately we are forced to do it. However, it looks like we had a very restrained approach, which I'm sure will not work.
Yeah, not forced to do it, but forced to do it if you want to compete. You've got to play that game.
If you want the job.
If you really want Amazon to come here. But my question is, and always has been, is it worth it?
Well,
in the long run, and you have experience in this area, you know, in the long run, is grabbing your ankles for Amazon to try to get those jobs here, is it worth all the benefits that they claim that it would bring?
Here's what I would say. It's not good or bad. It's not Republican or Democrat. It's a math game. And if the amount of money that is going to come in through taxes and whatnot and jobs and whatnot is more than what you are offering, it is a good deal. If it's not, then it's not a good deal. And I think the problem is a lot of times is that you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know that everything that is going to be promised by the companies is what's going to happen. But with a company this established who's promising a number of jobs that this staggeringly high, I think that trying to compete is a good thing. But I, you know, are we going to come up with $7 billion? Like, I can't remember which area
right.
it was. I mean, no. A state of our size with our culture is just not going to be able to come up with a package that big.
Now, if you go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and you go to the Justice and Drew page, you can see all these videos for yourself. But Dig put together the worst videos from cities begging for Amazon for its new headquarters, okay? How much money they spend on these videos, I have no idea. They're really well-produced and horrific. But New York City, for example, lit up its monuments and built buildings in Amazon orange. Tucson, Arizona sent a 21-foot cactus to Amazon's existing headquarters. Alabama,
like a threat.
Alabama constructed enormous cardboard boxes and placed them around the city in a blithe tribute to wasteful packaging. Not to mention, what was it, in Georgia, they were going to rename the city Amazon.
Yeah, there was one little like suburb of Atlanta. I forget what the name of it was, but the city council voted to rename the city.
That's derivative.
Yeah.
Didn't Topeka rename itself Google for a short period of time? There's some story that's very similar to that.
Yeah. This feels like the guy whose name nobody remembers from Big Bang Theory is in a Perkins at like 2 a.m. and all the waitresses are fighting over who can get his attention.
Little Rock, Arkansas took a rather different approach.
Hey, Amazon. We need to talk.
It's not you. It's us. We know. When you originally sent out your offer for cities to send in proposals for your future HQ to, we were all over it.
After all, you're Amazon. You're smart, sexy, and frankly, incredibly rich.
Thanks to our booming business environment, tech-savvy workforce, diverse, creative culture, and flourishing downtown, there are a lot of reasons why we'd be great together.
But when we started really thinking about what our future would look like, we realized it would probably never work out between us.
You want 50,000 employees for your new campus? Now, we have a sizable, resourceful workforce, but if we concentrate them here, it would be a bummer. Our lack of traffic and ease of getting around would be totally wrecked, and we can't sacrifice that for you.
You want on-site mass transit at HQ2? Here, there are many transit options that fit our city perfectly, and thanks to our compact urban footprint, many of our residents can easily get to the office on foot, on a bike, or just by a quick drive.
It would be cool if we could offer you that, but we simply can't do that just to make you happy. Amazon, you have so much going for you. You'll find what you're looking for, but it's just not us. Now, we're happy knowing that many great companies find our natural good looks coupled with our brains for business irresistible.
Get it.
If another expansion opportunity comes up and you're ready to join the
I don't think the reverse psychology
and idealists who
is going to work
always better,
but
they're
but
negging Amazon.
We yeah
found a way to make us work out.
I mean, they had me for a while. They're starting to lose me.
All the success in the
as we go into hour
love,
four
Little Rock.
Love Little Rock.
Love Little Rock.
No.
That was actually the better of the videos that I watched. If you go to the website and take a look at them. Yeah. That was actually more clever than the other ridiculousness that they put together in the videos. Are actually encouraging Amazon to come.
I don't remember us having a video for a specific project, but yeah, at the state of Minnesota, we had a video.
It must be nice to be a taxpayer and find out that your money went to make a video to tell somebody that you don't want to do something that you could just not ask for.
Well, and the problem with all of this is, like, okay, once you offer the incentives, once you bring the business in, if it goes bad and you want to go back and do it all over,
right,
you can't go back.
Nope. 651-989-5855. Coming up, we'll get to your phone calls. We'll also talk about the fact that the Ice Palace that was canceled. Not so much.
No.
Not so fast.
No. Well, kind of.
Kind of.
Mm. Kind of. We'll get you the details next. Justice. This isn't any money.
Yeah.
You know what it is, though.
Great song.
It is.
Good stuff.
Fantastic song.
Wait, is this a Christmas song or the regular song? We have to find out by the month comes around.
This is OG.
Oh, it's a great song.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew. Brianne filling in for Sam, who should be back on a Monday. Roundtable in studio, Brian McDaniel, Brian Miller. So, who was disappointed we weren't going to get the Ice Palace?
Yeah, I was just pointing. I was so sad. I didn't see the giant Ice Palace.
I was okay with not getting Amazon, but when I learned we weren't getting the Ice Palace, that was too much.
Were you shaken?
Whoa.
I'll stop.
Thank you.
So, out of the Forum News Service, one of the organizers behind the plans to build the supersized Ice Palace for the 2018 St. Paul Winter Carnival scuttled the project last week. The news was greeted in Detroit Lakes with more than a few gasps and groans of dismay. That's right. Well, there was a committee of local volunteers who've been working hard behind the scenes for more than a year to go and make it happen, so they would be upset by it. The committee had also been working on plans to create a local ice harvest festival in conjunction with the project, including a smaller-scale ice palace to be built in Detroit Lakes People's Park.
Oh.
Yeah. So the committee could have shrugged their shoulders and called it quits, but that's not how they roll. In Detroit Lakes.
No, no, no.
We just don't give up, said Amy Stearns, part of the committee. We get stuff done. So the meeting shifted to brainstorming ideas on how to proceed without St. Paul's involvement. So the ice harvest on Detroit Lake will continue, albeit on a much smaller scale.
Much smaller.
So the first question was, who still has an ice tray? because only enough ice would be needed to build the Detroit Lakes structure, which is expected to be about 24 feet tall, 60 feet long, and 30 feet wide.
Okay, that's pretty big.
That's
pretty big.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
24 feet tall is
that's sizable.
Quite tall.
Sure.
Yeah.
The Ice Palace designer, Hans Gilsdorf, said he's now looking to alter the original design of the People's Park structure slightly to include more interactive features that'll make it more family friendly.
If your name is Hans Gilsdorf, you really have no option in life but to be an Ice Palace designer.
Or try to kill Bruce Willis in an office building at Christmas.
He's an exceptional thief.
We are really excited that we can still bring something this fun and exciting to our community, even without St. Paul's involvement. So they're looking to get 24,000 blocks of ice down to St. Paul.
They say since we don't need...
Oh, they don't need 24,000 blocks of ice.
Put all the time and effort into getting those 24,000.
They just need 24 blocks of ice, I'm sorry.
Right.
To make that happen.
Why did St. Paul cancel it, by the way? I mean,
they didn't have the dollars.
Oh, just a money thing?
Which is a good thing. I mean, they didn't... Yeah. We were worried. When I first saw the headline, outside Ice Palace moving forward, I immediately assumed that, you know, Dayton stepped in and was like, I will give you all the money. But thankfully, that wasn't the case.
If I could walk on water.
I thought you said you were going to stop.
Yeah.
651-989-5855. We were talking about Amazon and the bids for Amazon before the break.
Dave Santiago, good morning.
Hey, good morning. You forget about some of the great things we have done in the past to lure businesses here. You know, we brought in a chopstick factory into the Iron Range, and we also brought in the, you know, Northwest Airlines maintenance hub into northern Minnesota.
Wait a minute. These comments are dripping with sarcasm.
Yeah, those were all failed efforts to for economic development.
Does anybody think we should have done more for Amazon?
Ooh, yeah. What if we build them an ice factory?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Two birds, one stone.
They can make their warehouse out of ice.
That's what I mean, yeah, right? The whole thing.
But does anybody think that we should have done more for the Amazon bid? I mean, I feel like the reason we did it was because of Best Buy and Target and making people happy. But do you think we should have done more?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, though, is that if you're bringing, and this is something that I should have said when I talked earlier, is that the issue is not even just bringing in new businesses. It's, are they competing with other businesses that are already here? And that would have happened in the Amazon case. I actually, you know, as someone who's quite critical of our governor, I think he handled this reasonably well in that, you know, it was a measured approach. It was, we're going to try, but we're not going to, you know, overextend ourselves, which I think was probably the right way to do it.
Do you think it sends any kind of message at all? Because these other PR campaigns, which were really just ridiculous and stupid. But do you think other entities looking to put their, you know, their hubs in different locales, do you think that those other places that put out those ridiculous ads and went those ridiculous links, do you think that turns anybody off, or they just kind of go, those are municipalities doing what they want to do and how they can do it? Do you think that's a turnoff at all?
Well, I think that probably those videos are not going to be persuasive to Amazon or another company, because it's the accountants, it's the nerds that decide whether it makes fiscal sense for them to go there. I think that it's probably more PR for the state to its citizens, saying, "Hey, look at everything we're doing to try to bring jobs here for you."
Yeah,
it felt very token. You know, it felt like a token effort. Like, okay, you know, we don't want to not try, but we're not going to go to the lengths that we know a lot of other states are going to. And I think John is right. I think Target and Best Buy and 3M and everything, you know, all the people that are already here, that was a big factor, because, you know, you can't go and throw all these money and incentives and tax breaks and special treatments to Amazon without them going, we're already here.
Yeah.
Can we get some of that too?
Well, and from the get-go, when Amazon first opened up and said they were going to be bidding, it was pretty clear when we had those initial discussions that, you know, behind the scenes, those places that know they have a real legitimate shot, you know, they know that. They're aware. You know, I don't think we were ever that high up on the list. Our weekly guest, Andrew Langer, made a comment that out of Maryland, he thought that was one of the, and they didn't make it on the top nine, but he thought those were one of the locations where they could go and end up.
It'll be interesting to see if that list we read earlier actually has any credence, if it ends up in one of those spots.
Real quick one here, and then coming up a little bit later on in the hour, we do have your Minnesota Vikings Ravens tickets to give away this hour. Mm-hmm. And we do have an update what's this come out of? It comes out of minlawyer.com. If court doesn't rule, Dayton plans to stand his ground. We'll get into that. Here's a quick one, though. And I could be completely off base. This annoys me, and I'm just going to say up front that I could be irrationally annoyed by this. But out of the Star Tribune, some weeks ago, the Metropolitan Airports Commission, the MAC, which owns and operates MSP, set aside $750,000 to replace tired swaths of the wall-to-wall carpet, mostly in the areas experiencing heavy traffic. They're refreshing the carpet for the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I'm annoyed by this because you're going to go and spend $750,000 to refresh the carpet for the Super Bowl that we're already getting just to have people come in and trample on it.
Right. They want it to look nice.
But they're already gonna be.
First impression of a place is the airport.
When we had the Super Bowl here in 1991, we trucked in fresh snow. So that way, when people would be in Minneapolis, they would see white snow, not the dirty snow.
Not the gross snow.
Yeah.
Slush.
Yeah.
They are getting ahead of themselves. The MAC, it has set aside $23 million to replace all the flooring beginning in 2019 at Terminal 2 and 2021 in Terminal 1. So it looks like they pulled some of the money out to replace the carpet for the incoming Super Bowl.
This is what the MAC, it's their job. I mean, they have to do that.
I just thought let's replace it now just so we can have the largest influx of individuals come in and trample on it.
Well, thanks to Senator Larry Craig. We're really keen on cleaning the floors of the airport here.
651-989-5855. We'll get to your phone calls coming up. And if court doesn't rule in the showdown between Governor Mark Dayton and the legislature, he says he plans to stand his ground. I don't even think he knows what that means.
Yeah, he doesn't know what that means, and he doesn't know what he thinks he knew when they made this decision. It's all a bunch of nonsense.
justice and
corruption. That's all coming up Friday edition Sean Hannity Show. Coming up today at 2, right after Rush, right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130.
Help change the world and have a little fun along the way. This year's All In for Africa Charity Poker Tournament is on Saturday, October 28th at 10:30 a.m. Proceeds benefit the Against Malaria Foundation. For more details about the event, go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Keyword events.
Now, Drew, the bounty, Justice and Drew, Twin City News Talk, the bounty on your head, you have it on there all, so early.
Yeah.
The bounty's over. I can see the bounty on your head right now. Yeah.
Well, already. That's part of the deal is we have to carry it around with us.
Is that part of the part
Brian
of the issue?
Brian didn't realize we were on the air. They're still having a conversation.
I know. I just was like, yeah. Hey.
Glad my mic's not hot. I was literally talking smack about somebody. I'm really glad my mic is not hot.
Welcome to the radio. You are going to be at that event though.
Yeah, Running Aces coming up next Saturday. If you're, you know, a poker player of any level, casual, serious, recreational, whatever. It's a really, really fun event, and it draws in players from all skill levels. I mean, it draws in, there'll be some poker pros in the tournament, there'll be recreational players, there'll be people like me that are terrible.
Uno players?
Possibly an Uno player, maybe a cribbage player or two.
I love cribbage.
And it's a really fun event, and it's one of those events that anybody can play, because even like the real serious poker pros, they're just there to have a good time. They're there to help raise some money for charity.
And it's a great facility. I mean, a lot of people haven't been to Running Aces. You should go check it out.
It's a good poker room.
It's a good poker room, mm-hmm. and it's got a great restaurant there. It's a good place.
Yeah.
When you've got
lost a lot of money there.
When you've got some time to kill, go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com, the Justice and Drew page. A couple of news stories up there. One of them are the awful videos that different cities have put out trying to lure Amazon to their locale. My favorite one was the one out of D.C. where the D.C. mayor is in her office acting like it was the first time she heard that Amazon was looking for a new place to put their headquarters, and then you realize the whole time you wonder who she's talking to, and then you realize it's an Alexa that she bought, and it's sitting on her desk that she got from Amazon. It's so bad.
Ooh, you know what? Kind of going on with the Little Rock thing, it'd be funny to make a really professional video, but have the whole thing be about eBay. Like, eBay, we want you so badly to come here. That's why we love eBay.
Alta Vista.
God, how good would that feel to put that in the mail and just be like, enjoy Amazon.
Move your headquarters here.
Yeah.
We want to be the home of Ask G.
Dear Circuit City.
Coming up, stay tuned. Stay tuned, because we do have Vikings-Ravens tickets to give away a little bit. We're going to give those away before 8 o'clock, so keep listening. But let's go to Steve in St. Paul. Good morning, Steve.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. I wanted to let you know that Polaris Industries moved a production facility in 2015 down to Huntsville, Alabama. They basically got 450 free acres and created 1,600 jobs for their off-road production market so they could focus more on the southeastern market. I think, you know, we could maybe use 1,600 more jobs in Minnesota back then, but just an example of a local place that was created in northern Minnesota moving jobs out of state.
And relevant because you called from a quad runner, so that's, you know.
Yeah, it's frustrating. As Brian said earlier, it's frustrating that, you know, to attract headquarters, to attract plants, to keep the ones that maybe organically started in your state, you do have to play that stupid incentive game because other states are going to.
But it's very complicated as far as like how you pick a spot, and it's no one factor. It's not just workforce. It's not just location. It's not just incentives. There are a lot of things that have to come together, and some of which, you know, you cannot change as a state. Like, we cannot change that we are landlocked. We cannot change that we are cold. We can't change some of the things that are factors in these decisions.
And our efforts with Amazon don't necessarily apply to the argument that I'm about to make, but I do get frustrated when there ends up being a huge, and so that's why I'm kind of glad that we took the approach that we did, but I get frustrated when there ends up this massive approach and importance placed on getting the big fish to come, and yet we continue to hammer and burden the smaller businesses, you know, with regulation after regulation after regulation. And thankfully, in this case, it wasn't necessarily the case. But
and if you want to tell me whether you're doing the right things as a state, the headquarters that we do have, those companies that are here, are they expanding here or are they expanding elsewhere? That, I think, is a true test on whether we're doing a good job.
651-989-5855. You want to take part in the conversation out of minlawyer.com. If the court doesn't rule, Dayton plans to stand his ground.
Yeah. Had he known, I love this, had he known how much money the legislature was sitting on before vetoing its funding and demanding that lawmakers return for another special session, Governor Dayton said he might have pursued another course. So basically what he's saying is, had he known that this wouldn't absolutely cripple them to the point where they would be disbanded, right? If he'd known that, oh, they've got enough money to get by till the next session, he wouldn't have done it. Like, he's making his, as far, the way I'm reading it at least, he's making his intentions behind the veto very clear. He wanted to cripple and defund the legislature to the point where it no longer existed, and use that as leverage to get them to do what he wanted, to agree to renegotiate positions that he signed into law.
I'm practicing my deep breathing, and I'm counting backwards from 10.
Why? Give me some angry Brian. Come on.
Well, okay. Because this whole thing was so half-baked. Absolutely half-baked. This was a radical decision based on how his DFL supporters were reacting to the bills that he signed and agreed to. Yeah. That's what this all is.
Right.
Whether he ends up being constitutionally, technically correct, if that happens, it is by accident. I don't even mean this as a slam. There wasn't an opportunity. There wasn't enough time to figure out whether this was constitutionally correct.
Right.
We all know, Democrats know this too. It never passed the smell test.
No.
By virtue that he's gotten a couple of rulings that have said, yeah, we get this and this, that doesn't mean that it was right. We all know fundamentally that this was not right. And no matter what the outcome is, whether Mark Dayton is his position is affirmed or the legislature's position was affirmed, nothing has made this worth it. No one winning makes it worth what has happened to the institution and the money that is just being flushed down the toilet. That you know, in order to support this internal feud.
If you had any question or doubt about how disingenuous Mark Dayton is in regards to this entire issue, right? This is his quote from the press conference yesterday. If we had known that last May, it would have dictated probably a different course of action. But I didn't have that information, and the Supreme Court didn't have that information right up to the time of the oral hearing. What he's saying is he's accusing the legislature of failing to let either his office or the courts know how much money they have at their disposal. Well, why would the legislature volunteer that information when they didn't know that Governor Dayton was going to line item veto their entire appropriations? Right. Did Dayton go and ask them before he made this decision? So he's accusing them of being dishonest, of being disingenuous, of lying, basically. He's accusing them of that. He never went and sought out that information before he made this decision.
It's not like... I was legislative director to the Speaker of the House. I worked in the Plenty administration. At no point in time was there a counter or something that just said, okay, today you have $5 million in this account. It takes time to figure out where all the money is. Think how much money are we sitting on? I mean, and I don't mean that in we don't know where the money is, but that is what is there to help us function as a legislative body. It is not something that's a slush fund that we can dip into and
not like my family budget.
No,
where I've got to watch every expenditure, and I need to know exactly how much I got rent coming up on this date. I got to have this much for that. Got to count for. It's not like that. This is a pretty complex and large budget, and it takes time when you're asked to account for every single penny that you could possibly have at your disposal to operate in a complete bare bones situation just to get to the next legislative session. Yeah, that takes some time to figure out, because you got to figure out what's essential, what isn't, what can you get by, what can you. Do without.
So if Dayton lacks the leverage to force the lawmakers to the bargaining table, and if the court, according to the story, legal observers say the court signals strong reluctance to step in to resolve the dispute, where does that leave us?
It leaves us exactly where we always were,
in the first place.
No
possible way of resolving this. And that is why I was so surprised at what the Supreme Court ruling was, because, yes, you know, it's not their job to think ahead and say, okay, here's how you resolve this ultimately. It's their job to say, under the law, this is what you should rule. And, you know, God love them if that's what they did. But what they did is they set up a path that had absolutely no resolution other than the governor blinking and giving up things that he wanted, or the legislature blinking and giving up things that they had already agreed to. And why would either body do that?
And just to get everybody back up to speed, in case you're new to all this, the five concessions demanded included rescinding three tax cuts, one aimed at the cigar smokers, one for wealthy states, and the other on business property. He also wants the lawmakers to rescind the prohibition on undocumented immigrant driver's licenses and roll back the teacher licensing reforms. And so we've gotten so far away from everything. Right. That's what it was all about.
Right. And I'm glad that you refreshed that, because these are the issues that he negotiated, his staff at least negotiated with the legislature, agreed to, and he signed into law. And it wasn't until the activists and the various, you know, the various people, various constituencies that care about these things stepped up, camped themselves outside of his mansion, started the hashtag veto everything. But let's remember, one of the biggest ones, one of the loudest ones, was roll back teacher licensing reforms. That is worth disbanding, defunding the entire legislature for. And basically all that was giving local school districts the opportunity to hire an individual here or there that might have some expertise in a field, right, and teach in that field. The teachers union was so adamantly opposed to that was a big one in what caused this whole problem where we're at right now.
Well, and let's, you know, what do they always say? Follow the money. What was going to happen? One of the big DFL fundraisers is the Humphrey Mondale dinner, which was going to happen shortly after the end of session. The groups that were upset with Governor Dayton for what he agreed to and what he signed, they were going to boycott. They were vocally going to boycott that Humphrey Mondale dinner. And it was a huge deal. I mean, this got attention from the highest levels of Democratic politics, and concessions were made in order to bring those groups to the Humphrey Mondale dinner.
Yep.
And I think that there was every anticipation that the court would rule against the governor, but that he would be seen as having stood strong for these constituency groups. Right. And I think that everybody is at some level a little shocked that this has gone on as long as it has, because there's no way to get out of this, yeah, this kerfuffle.
And kudos to Kurt Dowd and Paul Gazelka for standing their ground. It would have been very, very easy for them to say, oh, you know what? All right, let's have a special session. Let's, you know, we got to compromise. We got to negotiate. You know, that's how government works. But they didn't. They said, we already compromised. We already negotiated. I mean, there's plenty in these bills that conservatives to not be a fan of, that the GOP legislature sent to the DFL governor. These were compromises. These were negotiations. And it was a done deal.
If we're going to open up these bills for the things that Governor Dayton doesn't like that, right, he negotiated, then we're certainly going to open up these bills for the things that Kurt Dowd and Paul Gazelka don't like.
That's how
compromise works, people.
Well, and the activists and everybody wanting to do something, they're doing their job. I don't blame them. It's like, yeah, Dayton, you're just doing a bad job of your part of this. Everybody's kind of playing their part, and he's just playing his part very poorly.
Yeah, he sucks at his job.
Yeah. This one's so hard to defend. It's pretty indefensible. We all know where it's going. We have to have a legislature.
The amount of time that this has gone on for, who stands to benefit and who stands to lose more in all of this? Or is it just becoming is it just becoming less interesting in the minds of the public? And not just for the legislature in Dayton, but I'm also looking at those other candidates who are running for governor.
Well, that's kind of my point. Politically, it doesn't feel like this is going to have a lot of fallout, because Dayton isn't running again, right? So it's not going to be like
he can kind of do what he wants.
It's not going to be like a referendum on him or his decisions. And the tricky thing, if it were to happen, will be if the press begins asking DFL candidates specifically, but I think it's fair for all candidates, but DFL candidates specifically, what they think of this tactic the governor employed, and is this something they would consider doing if elected governor? That's where it's going to get a little tricky, and I think some of the candidates could find themselves in hot water. But I don't think anybody's going to go into the voting booth next time around and have this on their mind when they're choosing who they're going to vote for.
I wish we lived in a world where people cared about, you know, constitutional questions, right, other than completely not understanding what the First Amendment does. but no, I mean, who does this hurt? I mean, ultimately, if there is no resolution, and I believe there will be some resolution, this hurts the partisan and nonpartisan staff at the House of Representatives, and you know, in all the different connected activities. Yeah, and you might say, oh, okay, well, legislative staff. No, these are not. Some of these people are not Republicans and Democrats, and if they go away, then we're not getting them back. And the institutional knowledge that they have and that they bring allows us to function as a government. Yeah. If that goes away, then it'll be horrible.
Well, and I don't want to repeat what you said, Drew, but to me, too, the other thing that it hurts is just it's the process. This could have been a really good moment, right? We're not everybody was happy. Right. But it is politics. There is left versus right. And they do have to compromise. And so everybody shouldn't be happy. It could have been a really good moment where everybody kind of came together, figured out what they could and couldn't get and moved forward. And it didn't become that.
And I'll tell you one other aspect. It's pretty minor, but I think something that I don't think a lot of people have thought of. The legislators themselves in their political efforts are being hurt because part of what they do when they're not in session is they travel around. And they go to meetings. They meet with constituents. They advance an agenda. They you know, there was a bonding tour, you know, that was scheduled. All those things are being canceled and cut back in a big way because the travel budget has to be completely, you know, devoted to just staying open and just keeping the lights on.
Coming up, we are going to give you your opportunity to pick up Acme Comedy Company tickets. We'll also let you know about how you can register to win to have your holiday party at Acme Comedy Company. Also, have you been getting texts from Betsy Hodges? Some people have, and they have questions as to how she got their number. Mm-hmm. And
probably from Alondra Cano.
4 shootings in 5 hours Wednesday night. Bus routes to blame. That's all coming up. But before we get to all of that,
caller number 20 right now, 651-989-58. 5-5. You're going to get a pair of tickets to see the Vikings take on the Ravens, U.S. Bank Stadium, this Sunday. Caller number 20, 651-989-5855.
This is...
Congratulations to Ernest from St. Paul. He won the tickets to the Vikings-Ravens game this Sunday. Should be a good game for the Vikings. That's a very winnable game. The Ravens are a very beatable team.
Oh, if we can't beat the Ravens at home...
Right?
Well... I'm not going to finish that sentence because the Vikings can always manage to do things to upset
that offense is so schizophrenic, man. It's like you don't know what offense you're going to get from week to week. The defense, you know what you're going to get.
Luckily, we know what offense the Ravens are going to get, and that's one with Joe Flacco.
Yeah. Accurate.
Yeah. No, the Ravens lost to my Bears last week, and they should feel bad about that.
Justice and Drew, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Brian Miller, Brian McDaniel in for the roundtable. Brianne filling in for Sam, who should be back on Monday. Apparently, Ernest was had shaken by any money stuck in his head. I mentioned,
thought I'd oblige.
I mentioned, I gave him an earworm. I mentioned this morning on the iHeartRadio app that I had a playlist going, and Eddie Money popped up, and I didn't realize how many Eddie Money songs I actually liked. I wanted to mention real quick, and I know we have to get to Acme, that iHeartRadio is... In the next week is going to be doing a free view essentially of all the features on the iHeartRadio app. So if you've downloaded it and you haven't taken advantage of all of the extra content yet, there'll be a free of like a full week's worth of free content that you can get from it, where you can experience all of what the iHeartRadio app, if you're not subscribed already. Pretty amazing.
Well,
it's a great opportunity.
Always free. It's a free app,
right?
It's easy to download, and it's just the free version alone is fantastic. But there, if you do it like the little subscription, it has a lot of extra benefits, a lot of extra features. So next weekend, they're going to be, for all users, going to be giving you all the free features. So it's pretty cool.
I like it. For those that use other features like that, the iHeart one, genuinely speaking, is a heck of a lot better. The way that they have the algorithms and stuff set up, it really does a great job.
I'm more excited for this than I am for those free Cinemax weekends.
I was just going to say, that was always the highlight as a lower middle class kid. It was like, free HBO weekend in 2 months!
Yeah.
For very specific reasons.
My dad would like tape. Yeah, well, there's my dad would like tape everything that was on. Right. He's like, this has got to last us for the rest of the year. We have to stockpile our HBO content.
Okay, I'm not going to go
you
there.
Will you will watch Starman.
ECRs.
Yeah.
VHS tapes.
Yeah.
So in the 8 o'clock hour, as we've been doing the last two Fridays, we do have a 4-pack of tickets to Acme to give away. A 4-pack of tickets to go see any show at Acme. And the way we do this is Brian Miller, who is known for his affection of cinema and stand-up comedy.
Yes.
Has identified a stand-up comedian that went on to have great success in the film. He's going to give three clues over the course of this hour. And all you have to do is tweet or email your guesses as to who this person is. Make sure to use the hashtag TCNT if you tweet. That's how I'm going to see it. If you want to email, it's andrewlee@iheartmedia.com. Out of everybody who guesses correctly, we will do a random drawing for the winner. So do you want to do our first clue here?
Yes. You ready?
First clue for this week's Acme 4-pack.
In one movie, he played he and himself.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Now, they get progressively easier.
Yeah, maybe. Well,
I'm not getting it off of that one.
I was kind of hoping not. I don't want the first one to be a softball.
That's good.
So, all right. If you have a guess, use the hashtag TCNT or email it to andrewlee@iheartmedia.com.
And remember, if you want to book your own office party at Acme Comedy Company, you can go to acmecomedycompany.com and you can register to win to have your holiday office party at Acme Comedy Company by going to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.
25.
Tickets you can get. Yeah.
You can add on some if you want to throw in a little extra cash, but 25.
25 is good. That's a great. I want to have our party there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go party there.
You don't have 25 friends.
I know. It's a true story.
I don't have 25 friends. What adult has 25 friends? Who has the time?
Drew came to the realization the other day that he was shocked that we ended up staying friends.
Well, that's because he moved away.
It's exactly the reason why. Oh, that was the Dale. That was the Dale Earnhardt Jr. conversation where you notice the sticker was off the back of my car. It's like, well, I mean, when you're done, you're done.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Especially after last week, I don't even want to talk about that.
What put you off of Dale?
He's retiring for one, and his season's been horrible for two. I'm about to the brink where I'm going. He should have just called it.
Yeah,
the season's been so bad. It is so frustrating to watch.
Someday we should do a podcast. We should do like a post-show podcast where you chronicle your efforts to find a replacement driver to root for for Dale, because that was a whole thing. He courted many drivers.
Or this is like the Parent Trap. Like, we can fix John up with a nice driver.
But it was a lot like finding your soulmate, because then you find the one and you go, oh, that's it.
He was there all along.
He was there the whole time.
Yeah. Maybe
did the driver like take off his glasses and that's when you realize?
Maybe you just need to have dalliances with several drivers under a short period of time to get it out of your system.
No, I mean, I get it. I was a Tony Stewart guy.
Yeah.
And when he retired, I'm like, oh, okay, am I a Carl Edwards person now? And he retired.
Right. Carl Edwards is a total rebound driver.
he was my rebound driver.
Stewart's final season was bad too.
It was.
No, I've always thought of myself as more of a Dick Trickle.
But really, guys, you know what it really came down to, Drew, was
clean that up.
I was just a man standing there in front of a driver. Asking him to choose me. It's really what was going on.
Now, if Tom Emmer were on today, he would remind you that Dick Trickle killed himself.
He did?
He did.
Well, he found out what his own name was.
I didn't want to bring it.
He's like, wait, I thought I was Richard.
Yeah.
All right. Man, every single... It's like every time we get here, I have a story here that makes me difficult to go there. So, gosh darn it. All right. We're going to get there. All right, guys, we're going to get there.
Okay. Deep breath.
Out of Fox 9, we have audio from Fox 9. Minneapolis sees four shootings in 5 hours earlier in the week. And here is the story out of Fox 9.
Nobody wants these kinds of things to happen.
According to investigators, just before 9 p.m. Wednesday, a Metro Transit bus became a crime scene when a 17-year-old was shot in the stomach near 34th Avenue North and Penn Avenue. A spokesperson for Metro Transit says with multiple cameras on every bus, video clearly shows what happened.
What I can tell you is that individuals boarded the bus, and immediately after they boarded the bus, they confronted this other individual. So this, it appears, in the information that we have right now, leads us to believe these two knew each other. Not only did they know each other, but it seems from the information we have that there was some history there.
Just 5 minutes later, Minneapolis police got a call from the 1400 block of 25th Avenue North about another teenage boy shot in the hand. It is not clear whether these two shootings are related. Plus, just a few hours prior, a man was shot in the leg downtown and a woman was shot in the leg in South Minneapolis. Jeez. All happening within 5 hours.
When they say it's a non-life-threatening injury, you know, I don't care where you get shot. You know, you get shot in your leg, you get shot in your hand. That's a lifelong injury.
Minneapolis City Council President Barb Johnson agrees these violent few hours reflect much bigger problems. She points out soon there will be a bus rapid transit along Penn, but if people don't feel safe riding, it's all for naught.
We have a lot of people that are involved in really violent lifestyles, and there's a lot of back and forth and, people coming after each other and not fearing the consequences. And that, you know, that's really troubling.
Not fearing the consequences. Video capturing...
Some believe, and this subsequent story comes out of Channel 5, some believe the sheer rise in density concentrated in one part of the city could be a factor in the violence seen in recent months. During Wednesday evening rush this week, again, the one man shot in the leg at the bus stop on busy Hennepin Avenue. And what they point to is under normal operations, 5 bus routes pick up and drop off riders at Hennepin Avenue, according to Metro Transit, but 6 additional routes were added to Hennepin during the Nicollet Mall reconstruction. So that's more than double. So in 2016, ridership from the detoured routes alone totaled more than 8.2 million rides, all of which will move back through the Nicollet Mall in December when the bus routes shift back. That may be like a symptom, you know, the concentration. But again, that kind of ignores the larger problem of the rising crime that's in Minneapolis, you know, and you couple that with the conversation of trying to lure Amazon here. It's headlines like this when people go and look in and go, yeah, I don't think I want to put my factory there. It's a sidebar, but yeah. But you understand where we're heading on.
The transit thing feels like a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it feels like a scapegoat and something that you can point to when you either don't recognize or don't want to deal with the bigger problem. And the bigger problem is the relationship between police and the communities, mm-hmm. the police being having certain tools taken away from them that were effective deterrents in crime, and just not having a visible police presence. I've said it a million times on this show. One of the number one crime deterrent is the presence of police. Just if you see a police officer nearby, you're probably not going to commit that crime that you were just thinking about committing.
Although it is worth pointing out, oh boy, the Nicollet Mall redesign, the gift that keeps on giving.
Right.
Let's never forget how bad that is. But yeah, I think anecdotal evidence can be frustrating, you know, when somebody says, well, I always felt endangered when I was downtown. And you're like, well, you're from the sticks, buddy. Calm down. But I've lived in a lot of cities, and you go downtown, and you're like, yeah, it's worse.
It's
you have that
worse
feeling of, like, things just feel like they could kind of pop off at any time.
Yep.
It's ominous.
I remember last time I went to an event downtown, we were walking, and we were a few blocks away from where we parked, and we were walking, and there was what looked like a pretty serious fight that was about to break out on the corner of the intersection that we had to cross. You know, and that's not a good feeling. And you know, and nothing happened, but it was tense, and it was kind of ugly. And it was like, you know what, I am so much more less inclined to go downtown than I was 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. I thought downtown was amazing.
Yeah, especially late at night. You know, I don't, in the afternoon I'm fine, but you start getting after 10, 11 o'clock, you got to park a few blocks away. I don't love it.
Yeah.
Minneapolis police said they don't currently have data comparing Hennepin Avenue shootings this year to previous years, sort of getting back to the anecdotal evidence part of it. However, more cameras are about to go up on Nicollet Avenue in preparation for when the bus routes return to normal on December 2nd. And we were talking yesterday, there was this business, this Minneapolis business political action committee that was getting together to try to help promote some of the secondary candidates in the Minneapolis council races, because they're really, really concerned about those individuals that are leading in several of